In this first episode, a stranger comes to town. This is Rendition, a modern retelling of timeless stories. Each week, you'll hear a medley of folktales, ancient parables, and classic short fiction. We'll take this tour through folklore, literature, and the arts to reveal the fundamental themes that are still being reused today. Because the world has changed, but the human story remains the same. My friend Cassandra and her family moved a lot when she was growing up. I asked her how it felt to constantly have to leave friends behind, make new friends, go to a new school, and generally learn how to maneuver in a new place. She had lots of thoughts on this, but one story really stuck out.
I would say regarding being a stranger in a new place, my prime example would be moving to the country Jamaica as a teenager and being obviously not from initially from Jamaica, just kind of one of those more remote areas where you have to get into this inner part of town. And I happened to be walking and there was a man that was trailing behind me. And I think that we all have a genuine instinct where we know we're in danger, and I immediately realized that this person was not with the best intentions for me to be a young female walking by myself in the dark on the street. So he was rapidly approaching me, and I'm preparing my mentally preparing myself to reenact some action movie scene where I have to defend myself and call for help, right? And he pulls a knife on me, and immediately in that moment, a taxi driver came out of nowhere, and they opened the back door and said, "Oh, do you need a lift?" And I can't tell you how fast I jumped into that car.
Leo Tolstoy, one of the most celebrated writers in history, said that all great literature is one of two stories. Someone goes on a journey, or a stranger comes to town. Well, technically, these could be one and the same. It's just a matter of who the writer chooses to focus on, either a native of the town or the stranger. Today's episode will be based around this exact theme: a new person shows up in a new place. I have three really short stories for you today. Each has a stranger coming into town. The first two offer us great lessons on how an outsider can actually impact a town, mainly through the use of clever ideas and a new way of doing things. The third one, well, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. This first one is a really, really old one. It gets traced back to multiple European countries centuries ago. It's called Stone Soup. One day, a long time ago, a wandering stranger arrived at a village in Eastern Europe. All he had was a small backpack of clothes and a large iron pot. Now, the peasants of that place feared strangers, so when the soldier knocked on a couple of doors and asked a few families for a little something to eat, the response wasn't what he hoped for. "There's not a bite to eat in the whole province," he was told each time. "Better keep moving on." After the third time he was told this, he simply gave up knocking on doors. The stranger went to a nearby stream, filled up the pot with water, dropped inside the pot a large stone he had found by the stream, and placed it over a fire. Of course, as these things go in small villages, people are bored and curious. So one of the villagers sees him boiling something in this big pot and asks the stranger what he's doing. The stranger replies that he's making stone soup. The villager is now not just curious, he's intrigued. Stone soup? Who's ever heard of such a thing? The stranger replies in a shocked tone, "You've never had stone soup? Why, it's delicious." Of course, stone soup with cabbage, now that's a delicacy. The villager immediately offered to bring some cabbage from his home for the soup, but only on the condition that the stranger lets him have some of the stone soup. "Of course," replied the stranger. The villager brought back cabbage, which was quickly thrown into the soup. By this time, a couple other villagers had gotten curious and were standing around asking the same questions. The stranger then said, "If we only had a bit of beef and a few potatoes, this soup would be good enough for a rich man's table." As you can guess, other villagers offered to bring those ingredients in exchange for some stone soup. This is now turning into a spectacle, so more and more villagers walk by, and each time the stranger convinces them to add another ingredient. Finally, since the stone itself is inedible, it's removed from the pot, and a delicious pot of soup is enjoyed by all. Never had there been such a feast. Never had the peasants tasted such soup. And fancy, made from stones. That story you just heard has been reinterpreted a lot in different mediums. Sometimes the stranger is replaced by three soldiers, and sometimes it's a wise old beggar. There was an American movie called Fandango from 1985 that actually used this plot device, where a couple, which was broke, crowdsourced their own wedding using this little trick. And it was also used as part of an episode from a series from the 80s. That series was called Storyteller. Now, this second story you're going to hear is an allegory that comes from Jewish tradition hundreds and hundreds of years ago. It's called The Turkey Prince. There was once a prince who lived with his father and mother, the king and queen. And like royalty is known to do, they lived in pure luxury. He received the finest education and upbringing. To his parents' chagrin, one day the prince went through an identity crisis and came to the conclusion that he was really a turkey and not a human being. Initially, the king and queen thought he was kidding. However, after he stopped joining them at the royal table and instead moved under the table and sat there naked and pecking at crumbs, they knew that something serious was going on. The king and queen were very troubled by all this. They brought in all the best doctors in the land, the best teachers, the highest priests, and none of them could cure the prince. Then, one day, a stranger came into town, promising that he could fix the situation. All he asked was that no one question his methods. The king and queen had nothing to lose, so they let the stranger stay with them in the palace. The following day, the prince had company under the table. It was the stranger, who had also removed all his clothes. "What are you doing here?" asked the turkey prince. "Why are you here?" countered the stranger. "I'm a turkey," responded the prince. "Well, I am also a turkey," the stranger replied. With that, he began to gobble like a turkey and peck at the crumbs on the floor. The prince was convinced. A few days of this passed, with the stranger and the prince continuing to act like turkeys. And then one day, the stranger called to the royal seamstress. "Bring me a shirt," he said. When the seamstress brought it, the stranger began to put it on. The turkey prince stared and cried. "What are you doing?" Turkeys don't wear shirts. Says who? The stranger asked. Why shouldn't I be warm? Why should humans have all the good things? The prince thought about it and agreed. And soon the two of them were wearing shirts. Soon the stranger asked to be brought a pair of pants. He said to the turkey prince, Is it forbidden for turkeys to wear pants? Certainly not. The prince thought it over and agreed. And soon the two of them were wearing pants. So the process continued. Shortly thereafter, the wise man convinced the turkey prince that it was not forbidden for turkeys to eat human food, which was surely tastier. Then came sitting at the table and enjoying human conversation. Within a short time, the turkey prince, although still maintaining that he was a turkey, began conducting himself exactly like a regular person. The story you just heard stays about intact in all its interpretations, except sometimes, instead of being a turkey, the prince actually believes he's a rooster. But aside from that little detail, everything else usually stays about the same, no matter who's telling the story or what country it's originating from. Now, this next story is the newest of the bunch. It's not a folktale. It's a story written by a British author named Hector Hugh Munro, who went by the pen name Saki. Saki is considered one of the masters of the short story, and he lived from 1870 until 1916 when he died from gunshot wounds during World War I. This story that we're going to hear is called The Open Window. My aunt will be down shortly, Mr. Wilson, said a very self-possessed young lady of 15. In the meantime, you must try and put up with me. Mr. Wilson was already starting to hate the idea of visiting these strangers, although technically he was the stranger in town. But he decided to be polite and not start off his vacation the wrong way. You see, this wasn't really a vacation. It was more like a retreat for health purposes. Mr. Wilson had a high-stress job in the city, so his doctor recommended he take some time off in the countryside. Now, standing in this house, he hated the idea of making a series of visits to different people that he had never met before. I know how it will be, his sister has said when he was preparing to travel to this rural retreat. You're gonna bury yourself down there and not speak to a living soul, and your nerves will be worse than ever from moping. I'll just give you letters of introduction to all the people I know there. Some of them, as far as I can remember, were quite nice. Wilson wondered whether Mrs. Sappleton, the lady to whom he was presenting one of these letters of introduction, fell in the nice side of the equation. Do you know many of the people around here? Asked the niece, when she judged that the awkward silence had gone on too long. Hardly a soul, said Wilson. My sister was staying here, you know, some 4 years ago, and she gave me letters of introduction to some of the people here. Then you know practically nothing about my aunt? Responded the self-possessed young lady. Only her name and address, admitted Wilson. Her great tragedy happened just 3 years ago, said the young lady. That would be since your sister's time. Her tragedy? Asked Wilson. Somehow in this restful country spot, tragedies seemed a bit out of place. You may wonder why we keep that window wide open on an October afternoon, said the niece, indicating a large French window that opened onto a lawn. You know, it was one of those floor-to-ceiling doors that nowadays are used more inside apartments than as exterior windows. But this was in the old days, so this is what they had. It is quite warm for this time of the year, said Wilson. The young lady then started to explain. Out through that window, 3 years ago, to the day, her husband and her two young brothers went off for their day's hunting. They never came back. On their way to their favorite snipe shooting ground, they were engulfed in a nasty piece of swampland. It had been dreadful wet that summer, you know, and places that were safe in other years gave way suddenly without warning. Their bodies were never recovered. That was the dreadful part of it. Here, the child's voice lost its self-possessed note and became emotional and human. Poor aunt always thinks that they'll come back someday. They and the little brown Labrador that was lost with them, and walk in just as they used to. That's why the window is kept open every evening till it is quite dark. Poor dear aunt. She has often told me how they went out. Her husband with his white waterproof coat over his arm, and Ronnie, her youngest brother, whistling loudly as he always did to tease her, because she said it got on her nerves. Do you know, sometimes on still, quiet evenings like this, I almost get a creepy feeling that they will all walk in through that window. She broke off with a little shudder. It was a relief to Wilson when the aunt bustled into the room with a whirl of apologies for being late in making her appearance. "I hope Vera has been amusing you," she said. "She has been very interesting," said Wilson. "I hope you don't mind the open window," said Mrs. Sappleton briskly. "My husband and brothers will be home directly from shooting, and they always come in this way. They've been out for snipe in the marshes today, so they'll make a fine mess over my poor carpets. Just like you menfolk, isn't it?" She rattled on cheerfully about the shooting and the scarcity of birds and the prospects for duck in the winter. To Wilson, it was all purely horrible. So sad that this woman kept up these fantasies after all this time. He made a desperate but only partially successful effort to turn the talk onto a less somber topic. "The doctors agree in ordering me complete rest, absence of mental excitement, and avoidance of anything in the nature of violent physical exercise," announced Wilson, who somehow thought it was fine to share these details with someone he had just met. "On the matter of diet, they are not so much in agreement," he continued. "No," said Mrs. Sappleton, in a voice which only replaced the yawn at the last moment. Then she suddenly brightened into alert attention, but not to what Wilson was saying. "Here they are at last," she cried. "Just in time for tea. And don't they look as if they were muddy up to the eyes?" Wilson shivered slightly and turned towards the niece with a look intended to convey sympathetic comprehension. The child was staring out through the open window with a dazed horror in her eyes. In a chill shock of nameless fear, Wilson swung round in his seat and looked in the same direction. In the deepening twilight, three figures were walking across the lawn towards the window. They all carried guns under their arms, and one of them was additionally burdened with a white coat hung over his shoulders. A tired Labrador kept close at their heels. Then, one of them started whistling loudly. Wilson grabbed wildly at his stick and hat, and in a cartoon-like daze, he zoomed out the door like a madman. A cyclist coming along the road had to run into a bush to avoid collision. "Here we are, my dear," said the bearer of the white jacket, coming in through the window. "Fairly muddy, but most of it's dry. Who was that who bolted out as we came up?" "A most extraordinary man, Mr. Wilson," said Mrs. Sappleton. "Could only talk about his illnesses, and dashed off without a word of goodbye or apology when you arrived. One would think he had seen a ghost." "I expect it was the Labrador," said the niece calmly. "He told me he had a horror of dogs. He was once hunted into a cemetery somewhere on the banks of the Ganges by a pack of dogs, and had to spend the night in a newly dug grave with the creature snarling and grinning and foaming just above him, enough to make anyone lose their nerve. Creativity at short notice was, indeed, the young lady's specialty. So you see, being a stranger in a faraway land can be either a big benefit to the stranger, or it could be a big detractor and put the stranger in a vulnerable position. It all hinges on who exploits the element of surprise first. This is a reason why I think the plot of the stranger coming into town will never get old. There are just so many angles to attack the story from. At its essence, it also fills a big human need, and that's the need to learn how to cope with change. That's really ultimately what every stranger story boils down to. How does a human or a group of humans cope with change? Can the stranger or the town change before the turning tide swallows them up? I mean, it's the story of the dinosaurs, of the ancient Egyptians, of the Native Americans, and it's also our own individual story. Because no matter who you are, the time will come when you are the stranger coming into town. Guys and gals, thank you so much for tuning in to this first episode of Rendition. This is a brand new project, so I appreciate all the support that I can get. I started this podcast because I've been fascinated with folktales for a while now, and this concept seemed like something really fun to create, a new project. And I have been having a lot of fun putting this together. It's been a lot of work, but a lot of fun. It didn't fit in with the concept of my other podcast, which many of you might have already listened to. It's called Project Book. You can look that up. So because it didn't fit with that, the logical choice was to create this new show to talk about timeless stories and folk tales and other short stories. Just want to let you know that reviews do go a long way towards getting us on the new and noteworthy chart on Apple Podcasts. And the more we chart, the support we can get, the more support, and hopefully some sponsors, and then we can make this show even bigger. So if you have an Apple ID, I'd really appreciate you leaving us a short review. Just one or two sentences is more than enough. Just put in what you like about the show and if there are any folktales that you recommend that I should cover in an episode. So if you'd like to find out more about us or just recommend your friends, you can go to renditionpod.com. That's our website. renditionpod.com. RENDITIONPOD.com. I'm Alex Cespedes. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.